Welcome to my interview with the legendary Bill Brodsky. Bill, can you please introduce yourself and kind of your education and career path that had led you to where you are today?
Sure. So I grew up in the New York area. My dad worked on Wall Street ultimately for 60 years, and I got very enamored with the stock market at a young age and ultimately followed his footsteps to Wall Street. While I was in high school, I worked on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, which in those days was like the prime job that a high school kid would get during the summer. And then I went to college and got my undergraduate degree at Syracuse University and then went to law school there. But during my summers in college, I worked at brokerage firms. So my experience was always Wall Street and it was always stock market related. After I graduated from law school, I went to work with my dad at the firm he was associated with. And interesting, while I was there, a group of guys from Chicago showed up and said, "We want you to buy a seat on a new exchange called the CBOE." And of course, that was a very telling time because no one knew what the CBOE was. But it was interesting enough to our firm that we took a shot and bought a seat for $10,000 on the CBOE before it opened. From that point, having bought the seat, the firm had to then have a compliance person take the test to qualify the firm to do business with the public. And I was the highest person at the lowest level, meaning I had to be an officer of the firm. I was an assistant vice president. And I took the test, qualified the firm, and became what was called a registered options principal. So I was around on the first day that the CBOE opened at a brokerage firm and was involved when a customer actually called up and placed an order on the CBOE. So it's been an amazing ride since then. I was at the firm until 1974, a year after the CBOE opened, went to the American Stock Exchange, and ultimately ended up running the option business at the American Stock Exchange, competing with the CBOE. So that was a whole separate chapter of my evolution. And then in 1982, which is literally 40 years ago this summer, a search firm or a headhunter from Chicago came and said, "Would you come and run the Chicago Mercantile Exchange?" Which wasn't options, it wasn't stocks, it was futures, which I had no real experience in, but they needed someone because the exchange was growing so fast to kind of manage the staff and the operation. And so in September of 1982, we literally moved to Chicago, and my journey in Chicago started at what was then called the Merc, now called the CME. And I was at the CME for 15 years, and then I got a knock on the door from another search firm and said, "Would you come run the CBOE?" And of course, that I knew better at the time than I certainly knew what the CME was when they first came to me. And I ended up being at the CBOE for 20 years. Uh, 16 of which was chairman and CEO, and the last 3 or 4 years as chairman only, including taking the exchange public, which of course was a very significant part of its development and evolution.
And then currently you're working on a few other firms. So you're currently at Cedar Street Asset Management as a chairman, and you're at Options Solutions as well as a partner. So can you please go into a little bit of detail what you do there and kind of what those companies are all about?
Sure. So when I left the CBOE, my son Jonathan was at a money management firm in Chicago and had developed an expertise in buying small capitalization international stocks. And he was thinking of leaving the firm and going out on his own. I was getting ready to leave the CBOE. So I said, "If you start your own firm, I'll move in with you. I'll come help you." So I became what's essentially non-executive chairman of Cedar Street Asset Management, which is a boutique firm that specializes in small international stocks, both developed markets and emerging markets that have the value-based as opposed to growth-based. And I'm very proud to say that my son's done very well. He was recently given 5 stars by Morningstar. He was added to the Schwab recommended list of mutual funds because he's partnered with Harbor International. So he's the advisor to the Harbor International Small Cap Fund. And he's had other recognition. So he has his own boutique that's a very important aspect of international investing that most people overlook, and that is small cap value. And then two and a half years ago, through some other involvements, I partnered with my son, Michael, to create a firm called Option Solutions, which is a, again, boutique firm that specializes in doing options in a very conservative way, primarily covered writing for high net worth investors. And that firm has now been successful. Michael's the CEO. Steve Sears, who writes for the Barron's option column, is our president. Bill Speth, my former colleague and head of research at the CBOE, is our chief investment, chief strategy officer, and has other roles with us. And we have several other people. So we have a nice special business called Option Solutions, which is definitely in my comfort zone.
Wow, that seems like such an interesting journey. I mean, going from big exchanges to kind of finding these strategies at these boutique firms. And it's great to see that you can partner with family as well. That's awesome. One thing I want to ask, and one of the last questions for this introductory segment, is what are some of your biggest takeaways as your role as CEO and CEO and chairman of the CME and CBOE? I think those are some interesting things that viewers would like to know about.
Well, I was very fortunate to be part of an industry, which is the exchange industry, at a time of enormous growth and development. And for me, the move to Chicago was really life-changing, not just the physical part, but the career part. The CME was getting into stock index futures. That's one of the reasons they came to me. They knew futures. They didn't know anything about the stock market. I knew the stock market, didn't know much about futures. And now the stock index futures is literally all over the world, but really started in a meaningful way in Chicago. Running exchanges became something that I really tried to make very, you know, something that I could be very good at. The CME was growing like Topsy. We moved into new trading floors. We brought out new products. We had offices in London and Tokyo. So it was a very exciting time. And I noticed in the news clips just recently that the volume at the CME is 25% this year higher than last year. And it's magnitudes greater than it was when I arrived. So these are very important risk management products that were really not invented in Chicago as much as really fine-tuned and given tremendous liquidity, great education. So what I'll call the Chicago gang really took these instruments. Futures have been around forever. Options have been around for hundreds of years. They took them to not only a whole new level, but in the last 20 years with electronification and other things are beyond our wildest expectations of what the growth could have been. Same thing with the CBOE. The CBOE was founded by the Board of Trade, a futures exchange, as a way of diversification. And they just used the same concepts of standardization of terms and conditions of the products so that you could have fungibility in options, created an amazing clearing corporation, which is today the Option Clearing Corporation. And again, the volume, the liquidity, the sophistication of these products is just so far beyond what we ever would have thought back then. And yet they perform an incredibly valuable function to investors, speculators, producers, hedgers, in ways that make us very, very proud, I must say.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite an achievement for the organization and quite an achievement for yourself to kind of be there at that time as things were developing. That's such an interesting story. One of the things that we're talking about this week is option strategies and mainly going over the real basic parts. And this week, we're kind of breaking down a covered call and, you know, just teaching people about kind of these basic components of option strategies. Now, I know you were not necessarily a trader, but you worked more on the exchange side. So I was kind of wondering, over the course of your career, how have you seen new products developed on the exchange side affect market players and how they've kind of changed their strategies over time? How were things different from when you started back in the 80s to now?
The key to it is that it was based on product development and liquidity and then education. And the Chicago exchanges, the CME, the Board of Trade, the CBOE did an amazing job in creating products, whether it was the initial concept of standardization of financial futures, tradable options, was all done in Chicago based on the experience at the two big futures exchanges on how they standardized the products and how they created clearing and then creating liquidity. And all of these were necessary. You could have a great idea. If you didn't have liquidity, it didn't work. You got a great idea. You could have liquidity. You didn't have education. It didn't work. And all these came together in a very beautiful way. And one of the things that I was always excited about is that all the things we were doing in Chicago were then copied by literally dozens of exchanges all over the world. There was no financial futures of any consequence outside the U.S. when the CME and the CBOT created financial futures. There were no option exchanges outside the U.S. until CBOE started. And now these products trade all over the world. But there's no question that the product innovation, the liquidity, and the education is still amazingly based in Chicago. Everything else is basically a copy of what's been done. And even today, years later, there's nothing like the liquidity of these products, which allow investors to do so many of the different strategies that are available. And particularly with options, the amount of strategies available is almost infinite.
And how has this liquidity developed over time? And what were some of the challenges to get more into these exchanges and how to get more people trading these new products as you were coming out with them?
The New York exchanges, particularly where I was at the American Stock Exchange or at the New York Stock Exchange, which were the big established equity markets, had a specialist system. And it was based what was known as the unitary specialist system. There was one person who was authorized to be the market maker in that particular, whether it was a stock or an option. And what the Chicago exchanges never had that. They didn't like the idea of monopolies, which this is what a specialist was. And so they always had these large pits with hundreds of people sometimes in them. And anybody could go into any pit anytime. You didn't need a permit. And what they learned as they brought out financial instruments on the future side or options on the CBOE side is they were willing to open it up and sell more seats, which was what you needed to be on the floor. And so by allowing more seats rather than having a fixed number as they did at the New York and American Stock Exchanges, it allowed more people to come in. The more people that came in, the more liquidity you had. So as you brought in new products, you didn't have to say, well, we have a finite amount of market makers, so we have to spread them out, which ultimately would reduce liquidity. Instead, they were willing to sell more seats over time to a point where when I was at the Mercantile Exchange, I think we had over 1,000 members, which was a dramatic number. It might have been more than that. And the same thing at the CBOE, they had a fixed number of seats, and then they had people from the Board of Trade who were allowed to come over. So we had a large amount of liquidity providers in a much more open environment than existed in the traditional equity markets.
Wow. So that seems like at the time, that was a really disruptive strategy on the exchange side to really get more liquidity for these products.
And they would do all sorts of things to create liquidity. There were different incentives, but they understood, particularly in derivative products, that if you didn't have open interest, you couldn't have liquidity. If you didn't have liquidity, you couldn't have open interest. And even today, if you look at what exists, the important thing is that you need liquidity providers. And what really, and one other thing that I just thought about is that as many of these people who were on the floors started understanding the need for liquidity and the what I call the multidimensional aspect of options, because you can be in multiple option series at any one time, that they would create firms off floor that became major market makers, which we still have today. And those firms are really the core of the liquidity. Most of the liquidity is now off the floor, not on the floor.
It's developed a lot. And I guess one thing that you've already kind of done some interviews with JLN about it, but if you want to talk about it a little bit, is that transition from open outcry to electronic trading and your experience with that.
Well, that was a very wrenching aspect of it. That was not an evolution that started in Chicago, actually. First in Australia and in Sweden in particular, there were exchanges that started and were electronic. So they started electronic, so they weren't protecting any vested interests of members on trading floors. But once they were able to show that these, what are viewed by many as complex or unique arcane financial instruments could actually be traded, quote, on the screen or electronically, that became a threat to the Chicago markets, because now we have thousands of people on the floor that literally own the exchanges. And they go, we don't want that black box coming into our exchange. So they were very anti the what I'll call the evolution or revolution of electronic trading. And that became a serious challenge and threat, particularly to the CBOE, because the CBOE didn't own its own clearing. And if you didn't own your own clearing, you had less of a, quote, monopoly. And so what happened to the CBOE is that an exchange was started by the founder of E-Trade. And they created a new exchange called the International Securities Exchange in about the year 1999 or 2000. And they copied what had been done in Sweden by an exchange called OM, which stood for Option Market, and showed that even when you had many different options on one stock, you could still trade it electronically. And the biggest fight of my business career was getting the floor to somehow recognize that if we didn't have some sort of electronic trading, we'd be out of business. And that was a very difficult thing because most traders realized that that was something they didn't know how to do. So they were basically seeing their own source of income evaporate in front of their eyes. So that was a very, very difficult period for me and for the exchange.
And to kind of pivot things back to this week's theme, I wanted to talk about option strategy in pertains to a larger portfolio and how that can be used to manage assets on a larger portfolio. And I was curious to see some of the overall policies that you have at your new firm, Option Solutions, that kind of are implemented to kind of follow that concept and how you manage your clients' larger portfolio using conservative options and covered writing strategies.
The firm Option Solutions, which we started just a couple of years ago, was really based on my own personal situation of knowing options and having taken the CBOE public. I had a large position in CBOE stock. And I said, I don't want to sell the stock, but I know what a covered call is. And if I could sell covered calls on my stock on a regular basis, that'd probably be a pretty good thing to do. In the course of doing that, I dealt with some major institutions in Chicago, and they said, we don't do that. But if you started a firm that would do that for you and for other customers, we'd send you business. So we realized that we were onto something, that we were providing a service to people who own stock, usually had a low basis in the stock, didn't want to sell the stock, and in many cases were living on the dividends, and we were now creating another source of income. But the important thing about that is, as the stock moved around, we had to be very nimble to make sure the stock didn't get called away. So we were always very concerned about when the earnings were coming out, when a dividend was, when stock was going ex-dividend, or any news on the stock. And we've developed a very nice stable of clients who are similarly situated. And the hardest thing is to get them to understand, one, that options are not just speculative. That's, they're scared of it in the first place. And then they don't understand what a covered call is. So we have to explain that basically you're offering to sell your stock at a higher price, but because of the liquidity that we created in the option markets, if we have to buy it back, whether it's at a profit or a loss, we can do that. So it's something that takes a tremendous amount of oversight or watching every single day, but our results have been very good in different market cycles. You're not always going to be making a lot of money if the market's going straight up. If market goes down, you're going to be making money that the client wouldn't have made. And if the market kind of stays the same or meanders, that's the best of all worlds. So we don't worry about the stock itself. The client says, I want my stock. Don't mess with my position. Just get me some extra income. And that's fundamentally what we've been doing. We do some other things, but the core business is selling covered calls for clients who have large, what's known as stock concentrated stock positions.
And I was also curious myself on how you navigate this strategy with increasing volatility in the market.
Well, volatility is the friend of the option trader. So volatility is not a bad thing. What we've learned is two things. One, we don't go out too far, which makes it easier to buy back the position. And the other thing that we do is, if someone has a large position, we don't sell options in just one strike price. We do like a ladder. So we might have strike prices that go up at increments of 2.5 or 3 points or 4 points or 5 points, and then different expirations. So we don't put all our eggs in one basket in terms of what option expiration we're selling the calls on.
Well, I appreciate that explanation. So One thing, and kind of to wrap up this second section of the questions, is how do you communicate these strategies to your investors or clients? Because I know, like you said before, this is something that they might not have a lot of experience with, but they have these large positions and they want to make that extra income. So what is the best way that you found to communicate with them when it comes to using the covered calls service, as you put it?
Look, we're dealing with people who are sophisticated in the first place. But they don't know anything about options or covered calls. So what we tend to do is we try to start slowly and show them how it works on a small part of the portfolio until they have the confidence to understand that this really does work. And so it's more gradual and incremental.
Okay. So it's a gradual onboarding and, you know, kind of just seeing, hey, look, we'll do this for a little bit. You see that it works. And then we can kind of ease you into this strategy as you feel comfortable.
That's correct.
So kind of coming to these last bit of questions, these are questions that I ask every guest that comes on the show. But one thing that we're always curious about is what are some of the most important lessons that you've learned throughout your entire career working in the options industry and things that you would pass down to someone that's looking to start a career in the options industry?
That options are, as I used the term earlier, multidimensional. You can do almost anything with options without the underlying stock or options with the underlying stock. You just got to learn the fundamentals. You got to understand the concepts. And the key to options is understanding what I call the erosion of time value and how that works in the client's favor. So there's just options are so much more complicated and intricate compared to stocks or futures. The way I look at it is options are an adjunct to owning an equity portfolio. Doesn't mean you can't use options without any underlying stock. You can do lots of things in options. Strategies without the stock, but I'm fundamentally a investor. I've been involved in the stock market my whole career. And what I like to do is show people who have a stock portfolio, be it individual stocks or even today ETFs, indexes on broad-based portfolios, because again, we have options on ETFs. So there's so much you can do to enhance the portfolio and the whole experience by using options.
Wow, that's great advice. And so every week for the show, this week was Option Strategies, we choose a different topic. Is there a topic that you think we should go over in a future episode?
Three things that come to mind. Options on individual stocks, how people can use them. Options on indexes through options on ETFs, another way to use them, because there are options on ETFs that are cash settled. There are options on ETFs that are physical settled. So different aspects of that. And then, of course, the thing that I'm most proud of in terms of my CBOE experience is the creation of volatility index and then options and futures on VIX, which is a whole different situation. So each one of these is a course unto itself. But I'm very proud that there's an enormous amount of material very often created by the CBOE that's available to people for just it's out there. It's easy to get. And the beauty, again, I go back to the educational experience and the liquidity. None of this would happen if we hadn't created the products, created the education, and then provided the liquidity. And what I've learned with Option Solutions is even now, where people come to us with really kind of odd stocks, I mean, not big, you know, mega cap stocks, but stocks where there isn't a lot of option open interest or volume, and we can go to liquidity providers right here in Chicago. And they will make markets for us because they know how to do it. And again, it's one of the special things in the world. You will not get liquidity in inactive options like you can get here in Chicago.
That's great. And I feel like your connections being at the highest level of some of these exchanges has definitely helped you kind of learn the inner workings of how these market makers can really create liquidity for products that otherwise might not really have much. Last question, and this really does not have anything to do with options, but it's just kind of a fun fact I saw about you, that you are actually the only person to beat our current president, Joe Biden, in a head-to-head election in college. Can you give us a little bit of information on that history, that little fun fact there?
So it was in law school. It was my first year in law school. I had never run for class office. And I said, I'll run for class president, not thinking much of it. What I didn't know is that the guy I was running against had been president of his class since fifth grade, junior high school, senior high school, college. Joe Biden was running for president of the United States when he was in high school. I didn't know that. I didn't know him. It was our first couple of weeks in law school. And what I then didn't know, after I won in a runoff by one vote, and by the way, my wife was my campaign manager, is that he had never lost an election. So he and I became friends over the years, literally from the time that he started running for public office. He was in the U.S. Senate when he was 30. And my wife and I have supported every election he's ever run. So we maintained a relationship over the years. And he'll always make a big point if I'm in a crowd, even now that he's president, he'll point me out and say, that guy is the only guy that ever beat me. So it was always kind of a fun little story. But he's a wonderful, kind, my best word for Joe Biden, he's one of the most decent people I've ever met. And what's fun for me right now is because I've been helpful to him over the years after he won, he said, what would you like to do? And I go, I like doing what I'm doing. I don't want to, I'm in business with my sons. I don't want to do anything like, he said, you want to be an ambassador? I said, no, thank you. So they came back to me and they said, would you be on the board of the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, which is called SIPC, which basically is the insurance if a brokerage firm goes under. So that's a perfect job for me. So I recently was nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate, to be on the board of the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. So I'm still now a securities industry representative on a federal board.
That's such an interesting and amazing story and a great friendship that's lasted all of these years. Well, that's all the questions I have for you today, Bill. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I know the viewers appreciate all the information.
Alex, it was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me to speak.
Thank you. All right. I will see you later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye. If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.